jury in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin found him guilty on all three charges he faced: second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. How much prison time Chauvin will have to serve is not going to be decided for a couple of months from now, but it could be decades behind bars. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison spoke after the verdicts came in and said this is only the beginning of reforming police and stopping what he calls attacks on black and brown bodies.
Generation said if you were different in any way, you could never be a full and equal member of our society. Today, we have to end this travesty of recurring, enduring deaths at the hands of law enforcement. Those beliefs are things we have to focus our attention on.
Our Dimitri Sotis talked about the three guilty verdicts with Washington Post editorial writer Molly Roberts, who helped put together a multi-part series on police reform that came out about the time that Chauvin's trial began.
Well, I can tell you my pulse was throbbing leading up to it, and I think that was the case for so many people, both there outside of the courthouse and everywhere in the country. And there's this sense of release and relief that has come with the verdict, and I think maybe a little bit of hope that has been really hard for Black Americans, particularly to feel over the past years and years of trials with acquittal after acquittal. This really felt like there was no gray area. And if this too had come down with an acquittal, I think there would have been a good deal of warranted despair.
At the same time, just in recent weeks, not to mention going all the way back to last spring, we have seen so many more deadly interactions between black and brown people and police. Why don't these police officers realize that the eyes of the world are on them and maybe they would make some different decisions to de-escalate some of these situations?
I think I would say that it shows just how deep the rot runs, just how broken the system is. Public scrutiny simply isn't enough, because this really is, I think, ingrained in the culture of policing in America. That's perhaps not true of every department. It's certainly not true of every officer, but it's true of enough that we are seeing this happen even when there's so much scrutiny. I think that you really saw in this particular case kind of a drive to dominate and a reflex reaction that was aggression rather than compassion, even in the case just of a guy passing a counterfeit $20 bill.
In the Washington Post, there's one segment that I haven't been able to discuss yet on air. The broad umbrella is if we really wanted to prevent violence, we'd focus our resources on those at highest risk. Would somebody like a George Floyd be such a person?
George Floyd was in a community where community organizations could have been taking a look and trying to reach out to individuals, particularly individuals who had criminal records, or individuals who'd come out of jail, or individuals who'd struggled with substance abuse issues. And so that really is what we're talking about in this series, and what we've seen in some communities can make a difference. It tends also to focus on individuals who have been shot or who have engaged in gun violence rather than individuals who are involved in nonviolent crime. But I think in both areas, it's helpful. And the focus is supposed to be, well, let's not just roam the streets trying to find crimes. Let's not have police doing that. At least let's supplement that with community members and trained professionals talking to these individuals, reaching out to them, trying to work toward reconciliation, because most murder victims know each other, because there are gang feuds that are also known. And so working within those systems with a really deep knowledge of them to try to fix those problems rather than just police them away. Well, I think it was really striking to see that so-called blue wall of silence crack a bit, and really unusual. I think that often you don't see that happen. And so just because it happened in this really egregious case doesn't mean that it necessarily would happen in a case where the boundaries seem a little fuzzier. But I think also what's really important to think about in this case with police unions is that in his 19 years on the force, Derek Chauvin had 18 complaints against him. And the way that police unions are able in their collective bargaining agreements to secure kind of insurance against being fired for these sorts of complaints can result in officers who have engaged in misconduct, been accused of engaging in misconduct, including excessive force remaining employed and then ending up having the ability to do things like exactly what Derek Chauvin did. So a good place to start would be to look at those collective bargaining agreements, maybe to introduce some more transparency to the process, or even maybe to say, yes, sure, you can bargain like other unions do over things like pay. But when it comes to being disciplined for something like use of excessive force, we're not going to make it so that a union is going to be able to say you can't fire someone for something egregious like that.
What is a final thought here as we absorb the news, again, very fresh, of the verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial and the long, hard road ahead to try to make some of these changes?
Even though this verdict is what so many had hoped for, and even though the alternative would have been unfathomable, a verdict that is a positive result still can't make up for what happened here. That verdict can't just magically create some sort of healing. Really, nothing can heal a wound like this, and all we can do is try to improve in the future. And that isn't only about reforming police unions from within, but it is about this much broader rethinking of public safety that directs some resources away from police and toward the community and looks at other ways of trying to make our communities safer.
Washington Post editorial writer Molly Roberts on Skype. Read more about the Reimagine Safety Police Reform series in the Post.